Welcome everybody this morning. Nice to be back in person. We are in Daf Mem Gimel Amud Beis, and we left off the last time. We had just touched upon the Braisa had spoken about if you had the Shemen and you used it to clean your hands, and now you have to wipe it off. So you could wipe it off on the Shamash, believe it or not. But if the Shamash is a Talmud Chacham, then you should just wipe it off on the wall. So now the Braisa is going to actually quote several things that are expected of Talmidei Chachamim, and this is one of the things that is related. So we are on Mem Gimel Amud Beis, five lines before they get very wide. So it's Tanu Rabbanan. So Shisha Dvarim Gnai Lo L'Talmud Chacham. This is kind of an interesting din. What is the definition of a Talmud Chacham? It's one of those very interesting questions. What's the definition of a gadol? It really depends on who you ask. And unfortunately, not everybody is a very good judge of who a Talmud Chacham is. I always tell my students that, you know, when you're a Talmud in yeshiva, and you have a guy who's a year older than you, so you go and ask him your questions, and he knows the answers, and you think he's like some super genius. Until you stop and realize that he just got to the questions a year earlier than you did, and he went and asked someone before him, and he got the answers. So that's true generally in life, right? The person who knows the answer to your questions, you think they're like they know everything, but you know they may have just know the answers to your questions. But there are dinim and halacha that are dependent upon the status of Talmud Chacham. One of the late Rishonim, I think it was the Rivash or someone like that, writes, we don't have the din of a Talmud Chacham Bisman Hazeh. It doesn't mean that there's no din of Kabbalah Torah, but certain special types of dinim in a number of areas halacha may not apply Bisman Hazeh to anybody. Anyway, so I would suggest that at least some of these dinim, as far as I can tell, are not quoted in Shulchan Aruch. They are quoted by the Rambam and Hilchos Deos, and they should be understood in context, but they're still mostly true today in one form or another. Maybe for every person, but certainly for Talmud Chacham. So the Braisa says, Tanu Rabbanan, Shisha Dvarim Gnai Lo L'Talmud Chacham, Al Yetzei Kishum Mavusam Lashuk. He's not allowed to go out wearing perfume. The Gemara will explain why each of these after it finishes the Braisa. And the Al Yetzei Yechidi Balayla, he shouldn't go out alone at night. The Al Yetzei, and we had seen something earlier about Sakana. Some Memra Braisa earlier had said that an Avuka is like, the Lovana is like one, the Avuka is like two, or something like that. That was a question of Mazikin, being dangerous at night, but that you would assume would apply to everybody, not just to Talmidei Chachamim. Okay, so Al Yetzei Yechidi Belayla. Then Al Yetzei B'Minalim HaMetulaim. He shouldn't go out with shoes that are patched, you know, torn and have been patched. V'Yisaper V'Isha Bashuk. You shouldn't speak to a woman in public, in the street. V'Al Yosef B'Chavura Shel Ameh Ha'aretz. He shouldn't be eating at chaburas of the ignorant, of the rabble. V'Al Yikonis B'Achrona L'Beis Medrash. He shouldn't be the last one into the Beis Medrash. Presumably, this is at a time when there's a public drush or something like that, because otherwise, this creates a very interesting competition. But presumably, everybody entering the Beis Medrash is a Talmud Chacham, and therefore, it's just a question of who got there last. So it means that there's some public thing going on. So it means that if you're a Talmud Chacham, you're not supposed to be there late. You're supposed to be there early. And then the Braisa, at least that count, I believe, is six so far. And then V'yesh Omrim af lo yafsia psiagasa, that you shouldn't take big steps. V'al yahalach b'koma zakufa. Shouldn't walk out like that. Okay. So those who will listen to the recording will have a hard time understanding what I just did. So with a very upright, we might say, haughty posture. Okay, so now the Gemara explains each one. Al yete kishum avusam lashok, amar Rabbi Abba breda v'chiyah bar Abba, amar b'yochan v'makom shechashudim al mishkav zohor. In a context in which people were suspected of homosexuality. Understand just one thing in their particular context, because people can misunderstand this a little bit. And if you think about in the Greco-Roman context, there in the last hundred... plus years, we have sexual identity as a category. But the idea that a person is gay, that a person is straight, is a product of the late 19th century. That doesn't mean that human beings didn't figure out having sex in all sorts of ways, including with someone of the same sex, for thousands of years. But in their context, they talk about Talmud Chacham, the concern is if he walks out perfumed, so people will assume that he's advertising. And he's advertising because there's a place in which people indulge in this particular behavior. So it doesn't mean, when we say the Makom Shechoshev Mishkan Zachar, it doesn't mean that they will say that Talmud Chacham is gay. They will say that he is engaging in certain types of behaviors. As we'll see in the Braisa later, it is not limited to one particular flavor. We'll see that in a moment. What's interesting, the assumption is that men back then didn't wear things that gave off any type of scent. I know they might be a little bit different today. They do, some men do wear colognes that might have a scent. I don't assume that today. I could be wrong. I don't really know. But I assume that someone who walks out, a man walks around wearing cologne, has a smell, is not necessarily that he is advertising for other men. Okay, so that's the first one. So it older din, he says, only applies to Malkam Shechashudim al Mishkat Zohar. It's interesting also, there is a din in Shulchan Aruch that appears, which is relevant in some ways, although it's complicated in this day and age, is there is no Isser Yichud with a man with another man. But the Mechaber says that in a context in which people are chashudim al mishkav zachor, then a person should be machmer and have yichud with another man. So this too also has to be understood in the light of the comments I made before. There's no the issue if one believes that one is in a context that qualifies as chashudim al mishkav zachor, it means no men may have yichud with one another. I mean, outside presumably of relatives, the way that a mother can have yichud with a son and a father with a daughter, presumably a parent with a child is fine as well. Presumably siblings are okay as well. But if one is really concerned about that, so it's a problem in many yeshiva dormitories. Which the truth is, maybe that's a concern anyway. At least as apocryphal or maybe not apocryphal stories go, that might be termed opportunistic homosexuality. But if one regards a place as a context which the chashud al mishkav zachor, so then there would be an isur yichud that would apply to everybody. Any males. Again, because it doesn't apply only to what people today would say, people who are gay, because there is no, halacha doesn't have such a category. It's not the, doesn't deny people's lived realities, but a person doesn't make a difference what their particular inclinations are. It matters what their biology is, and so we generally assume, leaving out that particular machaber, there's no isur yichud between members of the same sex, there is an isur yichud between members of the opposite sex. Okay. Fine. So now, the next halacha is Amar of Sheshes. Lo Amar, this is still a detail, Lo Amar an Elef Abigdo, Avo Begufa Zem Avralei. So it's only if you're perfuming his clothing, but if he's putting on his body, so the sweat is going to wash it away. In fact, in some ways, most men do that, if you use deodorant of some kind. So, although mostly are not intended that people should smell the smell, but it does have the effect of negating the Zeya, and the Zeya negates it. Amar Rapapa Usara Kabigda Dami Ha'Amri La Kegufo Dami. Rapapa says, what about, so we've established that putting it on his skin is not a problem. Putting it on his clothing is a problem. What about his hair? So he quotes two opinions. Okay. that was din number one of the Brice. Din number two. Valyetze Yechidi Balayla is Mishum Chashada. We're afraid that he's going to visit a prostitute. So we have it both ways. V'lo Amaran Ela de lo kviya le idana, aval kviya le idana made yada le idana kazel.
That's only if it's not known that he has night seder. If he has night seder, the people will assume that he's going to the base bedder for night seder.
Rashi has a very interesting formulation here. Not all the bacher would like this. He says kviya le idana is kavu lo rabo kviya slam lo laila.
His Rebbe dictated what he's supposed to learn at night and what he's supposed to learn at night. So night seders may be important, but usually students choose what they want to learn at night seder. But it's kind of interesting here. His Rebbe was Koveyafim, this is what you need to learn at night.
Okay. Fine. Then, number three, Valyetze b'minalayim hamitulayim. He's not supposed to go out with shoes that are patched. This is a proof to a statement of Rabbi Chiya bar Abba.
the Amar Rachim Barabba, Ganayil the Talmud Chacham, Shiyetzei bin Min Alayim Hamitulayim. So Rachim Barabba said the same thing. So you might ask the question, and this is true always throughout Shas, why did Rachim Barabba just quote the Brisa? Well, the answer is because he didn't know the Brisa. Because it's okay when Amoraim don't know all the Brises, they're supposed to know all the Mishnayos. But when an Amora says something, and it's the Gemara will say, it's in the Mishnah, why does he have to tell us? They won't ask the same question with the Brisa. That's why every Tanya Nami Hachi that you see in the Gemara, Tanya Nami Hachi means an Amora said something, oh, and we also taught in a Brisa. So why did he just quote the Brisa? The answer is because he didn't know the Brisa. Okay. Ini, but the Gemara says, Vahar Rav Chiya Bar Abba Nafik. Rav Chiya Bar Abba went out. Now, presumably, I should step back and explain. Why is the Talmud Chacham not supposed to go out that way? Because Talmud Chacham is supposed to go out in a way that that evokes respect from people. If he goes out with torn clothing, patched clothing, so then it doesn't look appropriate. So so the question is, how is it that how is it that that Chiya Bar Abba went out with such a shoe? Amar Zerpa Dred Rav Nachman Bitzlai Al Gabi Talai. No, it's a patch on top of a patch. So the assumption is everybody's, you know, if you, I don't remember this with my children, but I remember with, as a child, children always tear up their they run around on Shabbos in their Shabbos pants, and they tear their pants, you know, on the knees. It's mostly like some boys. And what do? Well, you know, every time buy them a new pair of pants. So instead, they put a patch on. So sometimes putting a patch on is just seen by people's economic and sport. So there comes a threshold at which already it's passage for the Talmud Chacham to walk out that way, but up until a certain point, it's okay. So one patch is fine. A patch on top of a patch already means time for new shoes. The Lo Amaron. Yes.
The word Tulai, we have by Kudim Tuluit, by the Yaakov, the, so.
Okay.
No.
It means a tlai in Chazal doesn't mean a spot. It means a patch. You understand the connection. Obviously, you can see the semantic connection between the two, but it's not what the word means here. Okay, so then the Gemara's answer is. And then the Gemara further qualifies. V'lo amaron ela b'pansa avo b'gilda leslanva. And the rest of it, the Gemara takes out. Rashi explains this line he has, which is it's only talking about on top of the shoe, which is visible. But if it's in the sole, Rashi writes, gilda is ekev shekorin sola. So then it's not a problem because it's not visible. And furthermore, the Gemara continues, skip to the end of that line. V'lo amaron ela b'mosa chama. Rashi says that during what I could have given a different interpretation. Rashi says that this only applies during the dry season, not during the wet season. Why? Because during the wet season there is mud all over the place, and it's just going to be all over the shoe, everybody's shoes anyway. So you're not going to be able to see that it's patched the way it is. So it's going to be covered up. I would have suggested perhaps differently, but I guess it won't work the other way. I would have, no. I would say the following, that it's like when I go to a cemetery, when I go to a funeral, when I actually go to the Beis Olamim, I put on an older pair of shoes, because I know I'm going to be shoveling, and it's going to get mud all over it. So you might have said the same thing, that b'mos hachama, when your shoes are not going to get, you know, ruined, so you're expected to walk out with proper shoes. B'mos hachshamim, when this, remember, the roads were all dirt, there's mud all over the place, so people understand you have to take an old pair of shoes, because you don't want to ruin your nicer shoes. Okay. An alternative way of understanding it. Both of them are fundamentally true. Right? For me to walk around in this context wearing shoes that are like old worn and so on would be inappropriate. But if you saw me at a cemetery and you saw me wearing a pair of older shoes, you would say, of course he's wearing a pair of older shoes because it's going to get mud all over them. It's all about not being mevazeh Torah. So far, it's not creating chashad. The Talmidei Chachamim shouldn't do things that are going to make them be suspected of inappropriate behavior, and also that people should have respect. Okay. It's worth dwelling on this for a moment. Chazal, on the one hand, certainly have the idea that a mamzer talmud chacham is kodem the kohen gadol am aretz. We certainly have an idea that a person's value
inherent value is not related to the profession per se that they find themselves in or the state of life they find themselves in. It's more related to the Yiras Shamayim. But the reality is that there are contexts, particularly in the context of Srara, where Srara means positions of authority, appointments. That, for example, a melech, you can't appoint a melech, you know, from certain professions. He was in, like, professions that were generally mavuza in society. He was a tanner, I believe, is one of the examples. You're not memana him a melech. Now, you might ask the question, well, why not, right? If this person is wrong, and we tell a person, pshot nevelta b'shuka, v'al yomar kanana. If your person needs for parnasa, they need to be, you know, be a butcher and slaying hides in the shuk. That's what they should do, rather than depending upon other people. So, working in anything that yields an honest living is regarded highly. Nonetheless, Chazal were not oblivious, the halach is not oblivious to the fact that, for example, when you're appointing a king, that the way human societies work is that whether it should or shouldn't be that way, we have respect for certain things and less respect for other things. Even if it's wrong in a certain sense, it doesn't matter. That's the reality. You can't change it. And therefore, you don't appoint the melech from this standing. The same thing is true for a Talmid Chacham. One might look at it and say, look, this is a person who's totally unconcerned with Olam Hazeh. He's only concerned about Olam Haba. He's not going to waste money buying a pair of new shoes when these things hold together. So that might be true on the deepest spiritual level, but in the real world of people, when you look and see a person who's wearing torn clothing, the fact that the person could be a Talmid Chacham does not enhance your Kavod HaTorah. And therefore, Chazal didn't say that the Talmid Chacham has to go out and only wear Armani suits, or kind of, I presume, I don't know, I don't walk in that world, so maybe they're not even wearing suits mostly in that world. But the point is, we don't say a Talmid Chacham has to dress like he's the only Bruno Shalolam on Wall Street or in government, but nonetheless, he has to reach a certain standard. Next. Ba'al Yisaper and Isha Bashuk, Amar Achista Vafilu Hi Isha. Even it's his wife, Rashi says, because nobody knows it's his wife. So this particular halacha is also very much so subject to social norms. It would be inappropriate for a Talmid Chacham to be flirting with a woman in the shuk, even if that woman was his wife. Because, well, for multiple reasons, but firstly, people might not know it's his wife. I think for them, in many cases, and you have to figure out what the word yisaper means exactly also, but it would have been something that people would have been a little bit scandalized. He's a little sketchy. I mean, young people today seem to think that going up and asking someone else on a date, as opposed to having someone set you up, is considered sketchy. That's my wife, you know, has told me, at least for a former, even sometimes current work, as a shotgun for why you connect. That's sketchy. I don't know quite why, and I think that's actually quite unfortunate, but nonetheless, when that becomes a norm in a certain context, so then that becomes, you know, sketchy. Not everybody might necessarily care about that, but and maybe they shouldn't always, but nonetheless, even when things shouldn't be the way they are, social norms do sometimes, will certainly dictate how things are perceived. So here, Talmid Chacham is not to be misaper im isha bashuk. I don't think today, if somebody saw the rabbi of the shul talking to one of his female congregants, but they don't know who it is, nobody means that the rabbi's talking to a woman. Right? So again, the question is, what are the norms in a particular society? Tanya nami hachi, Ava Brisa that taught the same thing, afilu hi ishu, afilu hi bito, afilu hechoso, it could be his wife, his daughter, his sister, mafisha ein hakobakim bekrovosam. Not everybody knows that these women are related to him. Then va'ayis yasei b'chabur shal ame ha'aretz, he shouldn't hang out a chabur ame ha'aretz, my time on dilma asi lam shuche basrahu. He will be pulled after them. And this is, I think, an indisputable point in general, which is that environment exerts an enormous, enormous influence on human behavior. The best way to change a behavior, whatever the behavior you want to change is to change the environment. Chazal talk about this in a different formulation, but it's essentially the same thing. The Gemara Rosh Hashanah talks about four things that are important in terms of tshuva, and one of them is shinui makom.
Shinumako means you change your environment, you change the surroundings that you're in, literally you change your place. But the purpose of Shinumako is so that you're in a different environment. And the very same individuals, you know, you understand that you take a young person and you put them in one environment surrounded by one type of peer versus a different type of peer. In most cases, you're going to get different kinds of behaviors, presumably one that you desire more than others. Most people are not capable of swimming against the stream. Many years ago, Dr. Lamsa Chalavacha quoted a Yalkut Ruveni, it's not really a medrash, it's an achron, it's probably 18th century or 19th century or something like that, a commentary on Chumash. And he talks about the nuns, the upside-down nuns, if that's what they are, in Parshas Bahaloska. And he quotes, and then Yalkut Ruveni quotes, I don't know if it's a Zohar or a medrash, that says that the world stands on the upside-down nunim. So, what does that mean? So Dr. Lamb suggested that nun in Aramaic is the word for fish. And he suggested that a numen hafoch is a fish that swims against the stream. So the people who change the world are the people, the fish who swim against the stream. That's the olam omdim al nun hafuchim. But the reality is for most people, it's very hard to swim against the stream. So the environment is what dictates how we're going to behave. So the Talmud Chacham who spends his time in a chabur of Amei Aretz eventually is going to become one of them. There is a gemara at the beginning of the third perek of Sanhedrin that says that Miki Hadash of Yerushalayim Lo Yoshim Besuda Ela Inke Mi Yoshev Imahem. They wouldn't be Yoshev Vadin when you had Adhak, but they didn't Ela Kim Yodim Mi Yoshev Imahem. So the company that we keep, that was a little bit more of an extreme formulation. You know, that would be like when you get invited to a wedding asking to see the guest list before you go, but that's exactly what it is. That might be a little bit, to us it may seem a little bit extreme, but these were people, the Niki Adas, Yerushalayim, was very machpid about the people who they surrounded themselves with. So that might be a little more extreme, but this is the Talmud Chacham who is emesiv b'chabur shalmei aretz, and he is eventually going to be swept along with them.
To social and cultural norms, how do they affect halacha? Longer answer, so we can have another discussion.
Isaac, are you totally retired? Because we might be here a few years.
We'll be retired end of this year.
Okay. When you're asking a brisa like this, is often heavily determined by, you know, this, you can tell, you know, how do you decide, the average yeshiva bachar, I can imagine, many yeshiva bachar will lead this and say, oh, I can no longer talk to my mother in public. You know, imagine that Adrian Gabe sees you in public and says, so mommy, I can't talk to you right now. Right? What?
That's already a problem. If he says, mommy, I can't talk to you, that's already a problem.
Very funny. Okay. All right. So, Lafushe Meisu is different, okay? And so, Rosh Shlomo Zalman actually has this. The Gemara talks about that not being Holech Acharei Isha. So, yeah, I think it's probably in the Mincha Shlomo. He has a question on some Bachar. Like, you can't walk anywhere in Yerushalayim. You get on a bus behind the wall. Rosh Shlomo Zalman said it doesn't apply in this context. Because it's social, there are social norms. So in a different context, it would have been potentially very inappropriate. It's not inappropriate in our particular context. I'm reminded of a story. Again, you can't learn Gemara without having either a Rebbe or Seichel Hayashar or both. I once received a call from a head of school, one of the schools that I answer Shilas for. He had an issue with a teacher. The teacher told the kids that the boys are not allowed to be there when the girls are doing laundry. So I thought for a second. I said, "I know exactly where he's coming from." It could have been in a laundromat, right? So I thought for a second. The Gemara says speaks very ill of a person who's misaka v'nashim b'shasha omdos ala kvisa. When they're doing laundry. Yes, because they used to go into the river to do the laundry and to do so they wouldn't get their clothing wet, they would lift their skirts up. So, yes. So, I'm thinking about this. you know, and I cut us off, but that's not sure what the Rebbe was thinking about. You know, the Isra Gemara talks about also Lashaka Babide Tzivonim Shel Ishto. Shel Isha. You're not supposed to look at a woman's colored garments. That may be because maybe they once didn't wear color. Today, you might understand that that a man shouldn't be staring at, I mean, not when she's wearing them. You would say intimate garments a man shouldn't be staring at. So, it's sort of like you can totally, no one today would say, well, okay, well, if you see, you know, if your neighbor is hanging stuff on a clothesline in Yerushalayim, and she hung out, a colored blouse, and you're not allowed to look at it, it's big day tzivon and shalisha. It's not what the Gemara is talking about. You have to, has to be a little bit of seichel in the application of things.
So what was your plaque? Yeah. What did you tell
them? It was not a problem. I mean, you know, if they're going to the laundromat and so on, it's not really a big issue. I didn't think that's usually the place people like to hang out, but, you know, so I think, so you have to, so some of it is the principles, for the most part, the halacha, it remains the halacha. You just have to understand what its application is in a particular context. Now, some of it is also understanding. The Gemara does say you shouldn't be misapim yishabashok. So you, as an interpreter, you have to be trying to figure out, does that mean literally, is this a gzeira? A man may not talk to a woman in the shuk. Or is this just a statement of a type of behavior that is inappropriate or that is prohibited, but obviously dependent upon context? Obviously, there are a lot of dinim that we say that they're xeros and the xeros apply as is, and even though the reason doesn't apply anymore, the xeros still applies. You know, taking medicine on Shabbos when you're mildly uncomfortable. You could come up with a million different things where we say that the reason that the xer applies, even though the reason doesn't apply, and we don't redefine what the action is. So in this particular case, I know how this is being treated because the Rambam quotes it in Hilchos Deos, and the Shulchan Aruch doesn't quote it at all, which meant they saw this as, I'll call it advisory, in the sense that these are inappropriate behaviors. Are they usher and tap with a capital L? Well, no, not in the sense they're not exera. There's not exera drabanon that a talmud chacham can't be misafir mishabashok. Now, some may also be driven by the fact that because it's only for talmidei chachamim, so where do we find it? It's rare that you find exera that you say only applies to one group of people, not others. I don't want to say, you have to sit down and think. I'm sure you can come up with some cases. But typically speaking, when we say a talmud chacham should do it, it means it's a midas chasidus of some kind. So it's recommended. So it's hard to, there's a lot of seichel hayasher, and sometimes two people who both have seichel hayasher don't come to the exact same conclusion. In these particular dinim, I think the principles are all relevant, but they have to be applied in the appropriate context. Right? The Talmud Chacham who shouldn't go out shumavusam might mean that he probably shouldn't, as I discovered this accidentally, he probably shouldn't take his summer vacations in Provincetown, Massachusetts. A story for another time. Just driving through. just trying to get to views to on Cape Cod where we could see, and clearly that was the wrong way. The national park on the southern end of the, on the southern side of the peninsula was the place to go. Okay. So all of these things apply. Is it usher in the classes? No. But it might be inappropriate, but also contextually defined. Okay, then the Ayikanes Achrona LeBeis HaMedrash, the Gemara says Mishum Dekarule Poshea. So Rashi here feels the need to comment. Poshea doesn't usually mean careless. The person is not careless here. Rashi writes Mitzafel. They're going to call him the lazy one. So all the Balabatim show up for the rabbi is giving him the Shabbos Shuvah Drasha, and the Talmidei Chacham and the Rabbanim are the last ones to come into shul. So people are going to look at that. It's like, where were they? So that is the another thing a Talmud Chacham should be careful about, which is another way of saying for a Talmud Chacham, be on time. Not always. Sometimes with justification, rabbis are late. Understandably, people don't appreciate it. And sometimes they just run late. All right. The Yeshomim, one of the additional things to the Braisa, Aflo Yafsiya Psiagasa. The Amar Mar, Psiagasa, will tell us Achad Mitov Kuf Mimar Enav Shal Adam. So this is an interesting bit. I'm not sure that the doctors here would agree with this. Psiagasa means taking big steps. I assume Psiagasa in this context means physical exertion. So we generally, I think, regard physical exertion as a good thing. It usually, you know, strengthens the body. However, be that as it may, So you shouldn't do it because it each psiagasa takes 1/500th of more ein of shalom. Now more ein of shalom is also a very interesting expression. More ein of shal adam means the light of a person's eye. So we would by our rationalist inclinations, I think, jump to conclude or immediately make the assumption. It means the vitality. It means the energy. You know, when you talk about a person's eyes light up, they're full of energy. I have the sense from a number of passages in the Gemara that the idea of mor einav shel adam is actually an understanding of optics in the world of physics in the ancient world, which I don't think that we share. I think there's this concept that the way a person sees things is their eyes send out light, and that's how they're seeing things. And you would say that when they talk about the more inosh adam dimmed, and that's what a person is unable to see. So it's a very strange concept. I don't know what was assumed in the Greco-Roman world, but I think that that's where it doesn't really change for our context. But I think that's what the expression more inosh adam means: the light of their eyes, that their eyes, in order to see things. And the truth is, it's not crazy when you think about it. How do you see things? The answer is you shine light on them. So I don't subscribe to the theory of optics, but that is the sense that I started to get from a number of passages in the Gemara. But okay, now, of course, if every psiagasa you take does that, eventually you're going to run out of ma'or inayim, except that this probably works like what we call isuris of the Beirebi, that it takes 1/500 of what's left. Okay. Then, how do you get it back, though? So the answer is, Amaita Kante Lehadre Bikidusha de Be Shimshe. It comes back with Kiddush of Friday night. So Rashi writes, Shashose Kosho Kiddush B'Shabbos Balayla. But, you know that you might start to guess there's a minhag that some people have, although I haven't seen it at Kiddush Friday night, I've seen it in Havdalah. Which is what? I don't know if anybody's ever seen this. I recall seeing this as a kid. What? I think that is somehow an offshoot of this practice. Now, Rabbeinu Yonah already acknowledges the practice by Kiddush Friday, and he says it's usher, because that'd be like doing refuah. So he, Rabbeinu Yonah, as he does, interesting enough, even though he's not a rationalist, Rabbeinu Yonah, you don't think of Rabbeinu Yonah as a commentary, an Agadic commentary. Think of it as a halachic commentary, Talmid Rabbeinu Yonah. There's a lot of commentary on the Agada embedded in Rabbeinu Yonah on Bracha. So here he says it means the zechus of the mitzvah of Kiddush is what brings it back. What we might say if we wanted to, again, I'm not for what we call the concordists. You know, when people deal with the challenge of how do you read the story in the Torah, Bereishis, and what we know based upon geology and science in terms of the history of the world. So for those people who don't claim that the world's only 6,000 years old, for those who don't claim that the scientists are wrong, so the question is, but they are ma'aminim, we believe the Torah was given by God, so how do you understand Bereishis? So Dr. David Schatz, in an article many years ago in Tradition, talks about two different approaches to the reconciliation. One is to sort of reconcile, to map it out. It's called the concordist approach. So each day stands for something, as opposed to the approach that says there's no connection, and you shouldn't. One is a story about philosophy, one is a story about science, and the two have nothing to do with one another, and you shouldn't try to reconcile them, because they're just not talking about the same thing. So I'm generally not of the concordists trying to make Chazal's statements to come together. But I would suggest with Rabbeinu Yonah in this case, if the idea that psiagasa drains a person of that energy, so a person who appreciates and properly observes Shabbos, well, that's a period of actually restoration. That's how a person restores both their physical and their psychological well-being. So that's it's hard to be kiddush to be shimshay, because when you keep Shabbos properly, when you fulfill the mitzvah of kiddush, you understand what Shabbos is about. The imavdil bein chol lekodesh in that case. So then, that's a person whose mori na'im is restored by Shabbos.
And there's no union of refuah and havdalah.
That's it could be some people decide to do by havdalah. If I want to be a lamban, havdalah and kiddush are the same mitzvah. We generally assume havdalah is a daraisa, like kiddush is a daraisa, because the mitzvah of havdalah and kiddush is the same thing. It's being mavdil ben kodesh l'chol. So they figure, maybe, I don't know if that's what it originates, but they figure if I can't do it on Friday night because it's Shavuot, I can do it on
the
because on Motzei Shabbos already. I don't, we want to be malame to how the minute might have actually come about. I don't know. And the last one is finally, V'ayihach b'kol mazakufa, the Amar Mar. So others don't have this whole thing. The Rif doesn't have it. Mahalach b'kol mazakufa, people are ba'amos, ke'ilu dofek rag v'shchin v'chsim malach al eretz kodawa. A person should never be in a context where they walk around with a sense of haughtiness because it's, because God is everywhere. Okay.
Is there any significance to the
order? I haven't thought about that. It's a good question. It's not from a conceptual perspective. Stuff is certainly not in order because you would expect the Ayisaper Misha Bashuk to go with Al Yetze Kushum Avusa Mashuk. I'm thinking of the other ones here. So one, those two are Hashad. And let me look at the ritual. It's easier to see it more quickly. So that's Yetzi Yechidi Belayla also, because I would have put those three together, and then I would have put after that Yikanes. I would have put Yasei Bachabur Shamarit last, right? That all the others are about appearance, actually, right? Your dress when you show up to Beis Medrash. But Al Yaseh B'Chol Shamei Eretz is not about what it looks like, it's what it's going to transform into. So I don't know if there is some order here, but I don't know. It's generally a good question to ask. Sometimes it's not going to yield anything. Yeah. Okay.
The patches seems like it's the outlier. Because the patches one is more like you have to show yourself with some manner of respect.
Right.
But it's not related to sin. All the other ones are about, you know, that you might, it might come to lead you to sin, or it might, you're not.
People think that you're sinning. Okay. Although maybe I would ask the question about the Yikanes Achron LeBeis Medrash. That's like,
yeah.
Right, that's more like people have a low opinion of you. Yeah.
So that one, the shoes, is completely unrelated to mitzvahs and anything.
Right. So I
mean that if you have too much stuff on your shoes, it shows that you're engaged in too much nonsense.
So I actually think that this is not, it's not at all. There is a big issue involved. It might be even, I don't want to say it's the worst of the things, but Gemara says in Shabbos that a Talmud Chacham can't be Yotze with a revav shal bigdel, like a stain, a fat stain on his clothing. And Halacha even talks about this, what is considered a chatzitza, and there's a difference between the beged of a Talmud Chacham and the beged of Am Haaretz. It's Mishnayis. They say shel banoim is different than everybody else, and the reading of Chazal banoim are coming to Chachamim. But the Gemara there, I believe, quotes the Pasuk about a Talmud Chacham who walks out dressed improperly, where people will be mevazeh, is that it's chayav misa. I think there may be the expression kol misanai ahavu maves. But the pshat is all those who hate me love death, says God. But the Chazal's reading is don't read it misanai, but masni'ai, those who cause me to be hated. When the Talmud Chacham walks out in a certain way, and people say, it causes people to be distanced from Torah. So I think it itself is a very problematic behavior, but it's not. It's because what that behavior, the reaction it provokes.
Oh, no,
that's literally Chilul Hashem. Yes, absolutely. I know. In other words, there's always a Chilul Hashem. When a Talmud Chacham does something, you know, that is suspicious looking, so that's a kind of Chilul Hashem as well. People are going to say, X, that is a Chilul Hashem, even if she's actually doing the right thing. We are, you know, the Mishnah in Shkalim talks about, they would talk about the Kohanim who would be no till the Truma Salishka. So the Kohanim went in with the sacks to scoop out the Shkalim. They weren't allowed to have pockets or hems on their clothing. So the Mishnah says, and this, of course, every rabbi should be able to relate to, that no matter what happens, the Balabatim are going to be able to explain it on your ill behavior. If he became wealthy later, they would say he became wealthy because he stole from the Truma Salishka. If he became impoverished later, they'll say it was a punishment because he stole from the Truma Salishka. So no matter what happens to him, they'll be able to explain it because he's a thief. What? That's like Moshe. Moshe came late to the base of Medrash. They would say, there's no, because he has certain plans. If he would come early, he would say, there's no Shalom Bayis, she's fighting with his wife. So as the rabbi, no matter what happens, if it deviates one hair from people expecting, they can explain why something wrong is going on. Okay. So Chashad also, the Mishnah says that the Pasuk, you know, there are two kinds of, of a maris ayin. Actually, Mishnah doesn't use the term there. One maris ayin is people will see you doing something, and they'll think, oh, that's mutter, and they'll do it as well. So that's the maris ayin of lifnei iver lo sitei mechshol. But then there's the maris ayin of people see you doing something, they know it's aser, or they think what you're doing is aser, they don't realize what you're doing, and they think you're an avayin, and a rasha, and they think less of you. That's v'yisem nikiyim me'ashem and me'yisrael. That's the pasuk, and Chazal borrowed. The Mishnah Shkolim quotes that pasuk. That one's behavior is true for everybody, and it's certainly true for Talmid Chachamim. Not only has to be above board, it has to look above board as well. The original pshat in that pasuk is if the 2.5 tribes conquer the land, you know, they went in the vanguard. Once they've done, then they've acquitted themselves. They will have to go back and take their territory that they requested. But Chazal said, "V'yisem nikiyim Hashem Yisrael," that you're obligated in the eyes of man and God to be look nuti, not just that you are in fact are behaving properly, but that it looks like you're behaving properly as well. Okay. All right. So now we move back to halacha and the Mishnah on top of the Dalam and Aleph. So the Mishnah says, "Heviu lefan of maliach," if they bring him a piece of very salty herring, batchila, upas imo, they bring a cracker with it. In the Mishnah, the reason why you want the cracker is because the salty herring is a little bit too much on its own. In our context, we might say, depending on if it's a pretty plain cracker, it's so you don't get your hands all dirty. The Shulchan Aruch actually talks about that. So in such a case, mevarech ala maliach upoter es hapas. Shapas tfeilalo. In such a case, you make a bracha on the herring. You don't make a bracha on the plain cracker because the cracker is tafel to the herring. Zeha klal koshu ikar v'imo tfeila nivarech ala ikar upoter satfeila. That's the rule that whenever you have an ikar v'tafel, so you make a bracha on the ikar and the tafel is exempt. You can't make a bracha on both because making a bracha on the tafel in that case is a bracha lavatala, bracha shen etzricha. It's an unnecessary bracha. And therefore, there's no chumrah there. You only make a bracha on the ikar. Now,
with respect to that, if you ate them separately, let's say, you separated them.
So if you separate, if you eat them
separately,
it depends. No? Maybe. So let me give, you know, so this is going to be, this actually, if you eat them separately, completely separately, yeah, then there's no ikar and tafel there, ordinarily.
So if you had a soup.
Right.
Took out the vegetable alone. Let's say it was a.
You mean you pulled all the vegetables out and then you ate them?
And you pulled a vegetable out.
Well, it wouldn't matter in the soup because it's all they're both very priyadama. But if you had chicken soup, okay, let's take that example, and you pull out the vegetables. So the vegetables are very priyadama, and the broth is shahakol. So if you eat them separately, again.
Let's say you weren't sure what the bracha was. Let's
is it that one meal?
The bracha levatala question.
But the problem.
You weren't sure what the bracha was.
So when it comes to bracha, we're shown that the answer is make a shahakol. Because it's a bigger issue than making a bracha shen etzricha.
So then it would be bracha shen etzricha because you could have made one bracha.
Right. So the question, just to separate the vegetables, this is always a little complicated, but just to separate the vegetables and now make two brachos could be a bracha shen etzricha. If you like to eat it that way, if you like that they cook the vegetables, but I like to pull the vegetables out, I like to eat the vegetables first because that's my style, then I will have the soup, so that's not a bracha shen etzricha. But if you're only doing it to avoid it, so I think that could be a bracha shen etzricha. So here's there are two interesting scenarios in ikar v'tafel that one has to be careful about. One has to think about. The first one is, let's say we have cereal and milk. So it's pretty clear. Let's say, I don't want to even bring mizonos in. Let's say it's cornflakes and milk. You may cut down on the cornflakes. Now, you finish, okay, it might not be true with cornflakes. Let's say you had sugar frosted flakes in milk. Okay? So everybody knows, what do you do when you finish all the sugar frosted flakes?
Drink the sugary milk.
You drink the sugary milk, depending on how couth or civilized or whether your wife is around or not. Sorry, Adrian. You might drink it straight from the bowl or you might spoon it out. But one of those two. Now, the question is, do you have to make a bracha on the milk then?
You told us this.
No, that's a no. Now, that's still, that, yes, that's part of your tacho. The more interesting, so once you made the bracha on the cereal, now you potted it. Okay. Now, presumably, I would suggest, maybe, if you took the cereal, if there's a lot of milk left, and you pour it into a cup, and then over the next hour, you're going to be sipping on the cup of milk, maybe then you make a bracha on the milk. I could hear such a thing. But if you do it right away, you're just... So then you have to decide what bracha you make on sugar. That's its own question. Now, here's the more interesting question. What happens if you have an ikar v'tafel, but you're going to take a little bit of the tafel first?
So you can't separate them.
Well, no. But you can physically separate them. In the Rishonim, they talk about an example of this. We'll see if we can come up with one. Correct. Let's say I'd like to have a little bit of the vegetables first, but clearly it's tough to. So I'm going to pull a couple of vegetables out, just the way it goes down. My taste buds, I like it that way. So the question is, what do you do in that circumstance?
Or a cracker before you have the herring.
Okay, that would be a good example. Instead of starting, you want to prepare your mouth first. So you have a half a cracker. You have a small cracker first, and then you're going to start to eat the herring with the cracker. So the Ramaz Psach and Shulchan Aruch, I think Rabbeinu Yonah quotes it here. The Ramaz Psach and Shulchan Aruch is you can't get away without a bracha rishona on the tafel because you haven't made a bracha rishona yet, but it doesn't get its regular bracha, it's lowered to the level of shahakal. Because it's a reduced form of eating it. It's a very interesting shita. The Mishnah Berurah and the Gra are not entirely sure. I think this is the case they're not entirely sure about how to relate to this, but that was the Ramaz, that's what's cited by the Ramaz and Shulchan Aruch. If you're going to take a little taste of the tafel first, this is not to play games with brachos, but because you want to, because it has an eating function, right? If you were not Jewish and you didn't make brachos, or you were Rachman al-Khan, you were an Onein, you would do the very same thing. So then if you can't say it's a bracha shenchicha because you want to eat the food this way. And therefore, you would make a shahakol on that little, let's say, you take a little cracker first, and then, of course, if it's a herring, it won't matter, then you just made a shahakol and you exempted everything. But let's say in the chicken soup case, it would be the same thing as well. But let's say it were, I don't know, you have to come up with something where the thing that's left behind is not a shahakol, it's some other bracha. So then you would...
An ice cream cone, where it's a mezonos on the cone, but basically strawberries, and it's frozen strawberries, and you make a bracha on the strawberries, but you take a bite of the cone first.
Okay.
You're having a pita with hummus. And you're dipping it in. So we've spoken about that you make in the pita.
Yeah. First
you take your fork, put it into the hummus, and put it in your mouth.
That's a bracha shena. That could be a bracha
shena. Well, no. He's saying he wants to do it that way.
I'm saying, well, no.
He's saying he wants to do it that way.
About the pot being ikar.
Yeah. So no question. Well, give me a second. We'll talk about the specifics of bread because that's a. Hold off on the question of bread in general, okay? But let's...
This is not bread, this is a cracker.
You know, by now, I can't... I have a bunch of topics I have to talk about, but I can't do it once. Yes. I can manage them in my head at the same time, but I can't speak them all at the same time. So I think if a person genuinely, they like to start with the hummus, so which would normally be hadama, so we would say in that case, you make a shahakol on the chumas that you're tasting first, and then you make hamotzi and you eat your pita with chumas the way you normally do. Okay, so the question that's asked is, what is the Mishnah teaching us? We already know this then, because we already saw, berech halapas, patar safakaras, alparas, patar safas. So the Rishonim say here, it's because bread, you would have thought that would be true by bread. You would have thought that bread is always the ikar. Now, So the answer is kamash malon. So the Mishnah teacher says that bread isn't always the ikar. Even though bread usually is the primary food, sometimes it's not. And David, you are correct. A cracker in halacha is bread. It happens to be, it's pasaba b'kisnin. So you might make a mezonos on it if you're not eating a full meal out of it. But nonetheless, and maybe that makes it easier to make it a tafel, but I'm going to argue that it's not only that. It's not only that. But before we get there, so if you just read the Mishnah, I would say to you, David, very simply, yes, you can have an ikar v'tafel with your cereal and your milk. You can ikar v'tafel with anything, and bread is no different. You have to decide which is the primary thing, which is the secondary thing. Okay, now, remember, before we start...
That's what the Mishnah kind of says.
Right, that, if I read the Mishnah on it, if all I read was the Mishnah, I would have said bread is like everything else. Now, remember
bread,
that...
Bread, that's the ikar.
Right,
and
absolutely.
And it's only coming along with it.
Right. So I might even have gone as far as to argue. Again, I don't know if this is... I think it's...
They didn't say bread. They said...
Huh. I said cracker. I said cracker. But, you know, it doesn't have to be a cracker.
I got messed up. You're on yourself, right?
You know, Josh, you know what the word pita comes from?
No.
Pas. Yes, it's a Dagesh Chazak in that tap. You want to say he ate his bread, it is pito. So pita is literally pas. Yeah, pita bread is a redundancy. So, so again, I would have said that bread is like everything else. And the Mishnah, okay, the Mishnah gave an example of that. Very nice. But the Gemara doesn't sound like that. Umi ika midi dehave maliach ikar upas teila? Is it such a thing that the herring is the ikar and the bread is the tafel? Amar av acha berei derav avira, amar ravashi, Be'ochle peiros ginosar shanu. It's a case where a person was eating the peiros of the Kinneret area. That's peiros ginosar. And apparently these fruits were so sweet that the scenario we'll have to understand, to keep it simple for the moment, is a person had eaten peiros ginosar and then the sweetness was killing them, so they needed maliach to offset it. But the problem is to take the maliach alone would have been too strong, and therefore, they need a little bread to temper it. So now, if they...
So it's like A, B, C almost.
Well, yes, but I want to separate A, the Peiros Ginosar, because the Rishonim asked, one second, if you're sitting down to eat Peiros Ginosar, because you're eating Peiros Ginosar, you're now going to have the Maliach. But in order to have the Maliach to help in the Kibbutz, you have to have the Pas, there's only one bracha you should make. Bari Priates and the Peiros Ginosar, because everything else is a tafel for the Peiros Ginosar.
Yeah.
So that's why I get a scenario I gave, and this is discussed in the Rishonim, and in the Achronim, is that you ate the Peiros Ginosar already, didn't realize it was going to have this impact. So at the time, you had no intention of eating Maliach, so you can't say, this is a thin quote in Shulchan Aruch, if I have an Ikar and a Tafel, but when I start eating the Ikar, I have no intent of having the Tafel, and later they bring the Tafel, I decide to eat it, that's called Nimlach, that's changing your mind, and you have to make a separate bracha. You have to make a separate bracha.
Twisting what the Mishnah said. I mean, that's really taking a weird...
You are correct, Josh, except even though it seems to be a forced read in the Mishnah, the real question is the following. Is the Gemara challenging, and you're correct, giving a very narrow reading of the Mishnah because it believes that at its core the halacha is such, or because they couldn't fathom the metzius of the Mishnah, how could bread not be the ikar?
Sounds like the latter.
Okay, in which case they're not real. If you're correct, and that I believe is the way the Shulchan Aruch understands, and most Rishonim, it's not challenging the basic principle that bread can be a tafel. In your circumstance, bread is a tafel. Bread is a tafel. It's not that bread requires so much more to make it a tafel. It's that they couldn't conceive of a scenario that bread could so easily be made a tafel. So they have to come up with this extreme case. That may change in different cultures. In our culture, and we've mentioned this a number of times, bread is no longer the primary part of most meals. Okay. Right? So, and therefore, it may be that for us, we can much more conceive of, again, I picked herring on a cracker as a good example, because you might like the cracker, and that becomes a question about how good does the cracker have to be where you can no longer say it's tougher. But if I take a plain cracker, you know, take a saltine and you put your herring on it. So I think most of us would agree that the herring is the ikar.
So you're eating herring, herring, not eating cracker.
Well, cracker with herring on it.
There are multiple times, right? At an affair where they have like a little piece of meat on the bread, also same thing.
Right, right. That could
hot
be for bread.
Hot dog in a roll. Right.
Right.
Not eating the roll. You know, it's the primary thing.
I think not. Those are very good. They're very bad for you, but they're very good.
There's a question of whether it combines into the best cuisine or whether you need to add the cracker or bread in order to tolerate the first.
Or as a vehicle. Meaning
you could eat the meat on its own, you could eat a hot dog on its own, you could eat a cream herring on its own without the cracker. right? The cracker still may be tefil because that's not the, you know, the point of the food, but maybe they're talking about here such a sweet or such a salty item that without the bread you couldn't even eat it.
I think that is the correct understanding of the Gemara. And the question...
It's a more extreme view, because if that's the case, you can eat it, and it's just a regular piece of lightning.
So the question is, should this be limited or not? So if you look in the Madani Yom Tov, his commentary on the Rosh, he presents such an idea, but he notes that the Shulchan Aruch very explicitly doesn't limit it to this case. Let me read you what it says in the Shulchan Aruch. One second. It's actually in two places in Shulchan Aruch. This is one of the difficult things I discovered about Hilchos Brachos, is that you would have, when you're dealing with issues like this, you would think this should be part of Birchas Hanenin, which is in one place in Chelek Beis of Mishnah Berurah. But most of these dinim, where would you have put the bracha on Pasah B'Kistan, the Pasah B'Kistan? I would have put it with the rest of the brachos, where you talk about Eitz, Ha'adama, Mizonos, but it's not. It's in Hilchos Betzias HaPas earlier in the second Chelek Mishnah Berurah, and it's not later. This particular din that we're dealing with here is quoted in both places, actually. In Simen Kuf Samach Zayin, I think, and Simen Kuf Reish Yud Beis. And let me read...
The same halacha.
Which is not unusual. I mean, you have a few of these. You have that occasion in Shulchan Aruch. So I believe in Reish Yud Beis, it says, this is the rule, you're not going to have it. Kol Shu Ikar Ve'imo Tvela, Mevarech Ala Ikar Upoteres HaTvela, that's quoting the Mishnah, that when you have two foods, the primary and the secondary, you make the bracha on the primary. And he says, "Bein melefana, bein bracha shofanah, bein bracha shacharah." And then he says, "It's not only true if they're mixed together, blended, even if each one is separate. It means you eat them at the same time, but they're separate. Think about an ice cream sandwich. Think about the herring on the cracker." And then he says, "Vafilu pashu chashav mikol, even bread which is more chashav than anything else, imhu tafel kigon dag sheachal dag maliach vaochli mopas kidei shelo yasikenu begrono." Mevarech al adag upoter hapas kevan shu tofel. Okay, that's what the mechaber says.
That's what Sfarim did.
Well, this is Ashkenazim should do this also. I thought here he quotes a second din, unless it's only earlier. Maybe that second piece is only earlier in Kuf Samach Zayin, or Kuf Samach Ches, maybe. Where is it?
Right, so it's only functional, like a vehicle that's only there, the bread is holding.
So that's the case I'm looking for. No, I'm trying to...
Correct.
But I'm looking for there's a second place that this is quoted. I can't find the second one. I think it's in Kuf Samach. I don't see it now. I don't have the full... I didn't learn it in this. I learned it in the regular Mishnah Berurah.
Pull it up.
I don't have the sefer here.
I know,
but it's going to have a hard time finding it. I might have to continue this. This is going to be continued next time anyway. So there they talk about eating it because you want the cracker to hold it, right? You don't want to get your hands dirty. They don't get closer to the situation of what if I want to enhance the main food and I use the little bread to do it, like your meat on a piece of bread. So I think that case is a little bit unclear. I'll tell you the most practical example. Like, I don't think anybody's going to say on a sandwich, like, if you tell me, someone would more likely eat the stuff inside the sandwich than just the bread itself. But I don't think anybody would say that the bread is considered a tafel, that you don't make the bracha on that. But I'll give you the better example, which I think you don't make the bracha on the bread, is a wrap. Meaning a wrap is a food that generally nobody eats on its own. People eat bread on its own. People certainly eat on its own. So I don't think those ever become a tafel. But I think a wrap, I know people won't like this kula. But if you take the kulas, you have to take my chumers too. Like washing on your waffles. Even makes my wife unhappy. But I think that on a wrap, I think normally a wrap is tafel to the food that's inside.
And the general shock.
I don't know how many people have addressed this issue. It's a relatively these wraps are relatively speaking more recent.
I'm saying the whole concept of whether it's the hummus and the pizza, the hot dogs and the bun.
Yeah.
I think most people intuitively watch. Now that's
Right, but most people don't intuitively wash for the Moshe Bateva, for the pigs and blankets, right? For the hot dogs in a dough.
Right.
Most people don't intuitively wash for that. And it's hard to argue that that dough was any different than the dough bread. And only argument, are those baked in those in the pot pastry? If they're baked in it, then it's passed on a piston. If it's baked separately, then it's not. No, that may be. They bake together.
Yeah, because you slice the other hot dog. I mean, the way
the hot dogs are ready.
You slice the whole thing, you have a whole one, and you put the
wrap it around, right? So that might be why, right? But I don't. Right. So, but again, the difference between a hot dog bun or a pizza and a wrap is a significant qualitative difference, right? When I taught this in Shir, I think it was a little after your time, David. I said, I don't know of anybody who would eat wraps alone. And, of course, one Masood in my Shir said, I do. I say, but I do eat some kolodom. But
doesn't it depend how much you like the bread component of what you're eating? Like, if I would eat that pizza, like, I don't know. I mean, if I would eat the pizza alone without the hummus, then why would it be something I wouldn't make a bracha on?
Oh, I think you do on the pizza. I think a wrap is sui generis because a wrap is designed.
The wrap is designed. The whole
primary is a holder. It adds adds a little bit of heft, but not much. Well, no, I think it's only true. I don't think anybody would say it by a sandwich. The problem where the post I don't see talking about explicitly, and Mishabura doesn't, is this kind of in-between territory where the tafel, it's clear what is absolutely a tafel, and it's there only as an enhancer of the thing, but it enhances it, right? It's not just as a holder. It's not just to negate the impact upon his throat. So next time, I will pull out for you that particular example. They talk about the thing on a cracker, and there it's regarded as a tafel. So, anyway, yes, it appears from the Gemara that somehow this is a very unusual circumstance, but the Shulchan Aruch assumes it applies.
You're giving another practical application.
Well, but the Shulchan Aruch assumes it's not limited to this case of Peiros Ki Nosar. It's going to be taken a little bit more broadly than the Gemara.